Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shisada Kono Kumara. You're listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I hope you all had a beautiful Thanksgiving last week if you are here in America. We're going to go ahead and do our clearing. I just wanted to let you know ahead of time that PLEN is with us, of course, as well as Linda, Megan, and Tim, our core council members for the Shambhala Center. So let's go ahead and get started. Please take a nice deep breath. Close your eyes and get yourself centered. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower bodies, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And now I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. And PLEN places herself in service as well. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Stay where you are. We're just going to do a real short little meditation, more of an intention. The energies have been very strong this past week, and we are ramping up for a lot of change through December. So let's just go ahead and hold space for humanity, for the elemental kingdom, for all those here in service, in manifestation, and all of those who are not currently in manifestation, but who are also in service to the planet and humanity. Let's just take a nice deep breath. I want you to visualize crystal white light coming down through your crown, through the center of your head, down through your throat, into your heart. Take a nice deep breath, and on your exhale, I want you to blow that white light out everywhere. Let's do that three times. Take a deep breath. One more time. Excellent. Thank you for that. All right. This is a little bit of an unusual night because normally you have two of us who were plugged in and can talk to each other and talk to you. And tonight PLAN is without a microphone. I forgot my laptop at home, so I'm to blame. And so we're going to do things just a little different. And actually, it was interesting because earlier tonight when I was thinking about the show, I never really have a sense of what we're going to talk about. But every now and again, something comes. And tonight what kept coming for me was that it needed to be kind of conversational. So last time we were with you live was the week before last, and I got a message from one of our beloved, dearly beloved listeners who said that I sounded kind of cranky. Because I really had a point to make last time. And I said, oh, you know, what a shame, because here I thought I sounded impassioned. So let's keep it light tonight for our friend in Connecticut. What do we want to talk about? Now, PLAN, you said that there were some things that came up during our regular session, and you wanted to carry them over to ask some questions. So you want to come sit in the hot seat here and talk to us? Sure. Yay. So we have a little bit of microphone back and forth tonight, so just bear with us.
I just put a Listerine thing in my mouth. Toki, good. Sorry. Okay, so we were talking about responsibility for people. And one thing that is coming up for me is I feel, for me, when it comes to love for people, I also feel responsible for them. And it goes back to the way I was raised. You know, when you love someone or something, you take care of it, you're responsible for it. In our household, whether you were family or friend, we looked out for you like you were part of the immediate family. And of course, I do know that, you know, an adult can take care of themselves. They don't really truly need me. Am I truly responsible for them? No. But at the same time, I do love them. I want the best for them. If you need me, I'm here for you, you know. But there are times where I may feel obligated, you know, if I'm tired or I got something else going on and I really don't have the time, like maybe I'm cooking dinner. I can't really talk to you right now. Or, you know, you have some people that are so wrapped up in their story, like you're just going in circles. Like no matter what I say, you're not hearing me. You know, so that's a big thing for me. Like, and you were saying before, right action is taking care of yourself, doing what needs to be done for you. And
sometimes.
But my thing is, I feel like I'm here to be of service. So if I'm needed, no matter how I feel, I should be of service. You know? And I'm being told that I need to look at that whole, if you love somebody, you're responsible for them.
Okay. So, well, I don't know if you want to walk away because we may have to come back. So this is interesting. We have to keep in mind, and we talked about this earlier, you know, and this is one of the greatest challenges of this program is that I have no idea who's listening and I have no idea what level they are currently kind of sitting at. So I have to try to speak in a way that speaks to everybody, right? Because it's the interesting thing about the work is that as more and more dissolution takes place, it's like some things that are very true in one sense, you will actually reach a space where it no longer holds true. And so I have to, you know, if you've been listening to me long enough, you'll know I usually say like, this is true here. However, you know, if seen from this place, this is how it's seen. And there is a piece of that is sitting in this, right? So I was particularly struck by the use of the term obligation. And it's an interesting thing because, again, from the place of the personal self and from the place of this story here where consciousness is stuck, obligation is seen as more of a negative thing, right? Well, in truth, it's not negative or positive, right? It's a concept, and that's all it is a concept. So if that is seen for what it is, that right there, when it's truly seen, will kind of negate the sense of being stuck that you feel within your concept of feeling obligated, okay? There's a level at which, you know you are here in service. And I will speak from a very personal place here that, of course, I know I am here in service. And there are plenty of times that I have done things that absolutely interfered with what would be my quote-unquote life, right, outside of the work that I do. So things that interfered, times that I took phone calls or responded to emails or texts from, people that I work with, where maybe I was supposed to do something and I was supposed to maybe sit and watch a movie or do something with my husband, and I went upstairs to check my email, and I come down an hour later, and he has no idea what just happened. And, you know, on that side, you know, is the obligation a good thing? Well, if you asked him, he'd say no, right? Because it really put a damper on his day. However, from my space of service, that obligation that I felt overrode, you know, what that personal self kind of wanted to do in the moment. Now, could I use that as a reason to be bitter about my role as a guide? Well, sure, if I was going to be personal about it. However, seen from beyond that, when you just see it from the level of it is what it is, well, the reality is, you know, in the moment, if you look at the greater situation, I have a husband who's not, say, going through some kind of traumatic emotional experience, just waiting for me to watch a movie. And on the other hand, I have someone that I work with who is struggling and needs guidance. And so in the space of doing the what is in the highest good of all concerned in that moment, it absolutely is to be of service to the person who is needing it, right? Now, that's not to say that I could not also not respond, because maybe in that moment, the person needed time to sit in whatever it was that they were dealing with before I responded, right? And I would have an inner sense of what was appropriate to do in that moment. And as far as my husband is concerned, well, maybe he needs to see whatever would pop up for him to have me disappear for an hour and then come back. And maybe that stirs something in him and gets him angry about feeling like he was abandoned or whatever that is. And maybe that's something he needs to look at, right? So you have to see it from a place that's kind of beyond the personal story of all of it, right? So, you know, to be of service is really kind of an impersonal thing. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it certainly feels personal to the person that you're serving, right? You see it? Yeah.
I see what it is for me.
Yeah, that's right. And the sticky point is that we are functioning, you know, called to function from that place here in the world where the vast majority of the world can't understand that, because it's all personal for them, all of it. There's nothing outside of the personal for them. So you end up in a situation all the time where people don't understand your choices, right? And the last thing you're going to do is to end up getting in a defensive position, because then you just walked into that person's reality, and that their consciousness just wrapped right around you to do that, right? You have to stay very centered in what you're doing, you know. Are we responsible for anybody? No, we are not. Not even your children. People, I mean, this is a tough one for parents because, you know, parents believe those children are theirs. They're not yours. You're a temporary custodian, you know, here to grace them with your wisdom and give them love and shelter and all these beautiful things. However, they are not yours. You know, you're not older than them. You both are the same thing, you know, beginningless and endless. And they have their own journeys, just as you do, right? It's not your responsibility to make sure that they get on the right path. Now, you can do everything in your power to help guide them that way, but their choices are their choices. You know, we have no way of knowing anyone in your life. You have no way of knowing what their karmic debt is, what they need to move through in this lifetime in order to balance that. And who are you to step in the way and say, I feel like I know what's best? Well, you know, from one level, maybe you do have a higher sight and you can see sometimes what is definitely best. But it's not, you know, it's different with a small child because you kind of are in a position of enforcing things with a small child. But when they get older, and then, and especially when you're talking about, say, friends or coworkers or parents or anything like that, anyone who's an adult, you know, there's only so much you can do because they have every right to make their own choices. And we have no right to impose our choices on anybody. You know, even if you can see that it would be in their best interest, we just don't have the right to do that. You know, and that's universal law. You don't impose your will on someone. And that gets very, that's a very, and I'll say this now, I don't think this has ever come up on the program. That's a really challenging thing when it happens to a person. It creates a whole level of a mess. When you have especially a child whose parent, a parent imposes their will on that child over and over and over again, it creates a really, really big karmic mess. And what it creates in the child is that the child will grow up and literally not be able to function from its own will. It's a mess. We've actually worked with someone here through the Shambhala Center who had that, and we had to go in and do very deep work to fix it. And it had to was not only with that person, but with that person's parent. Of course, you know, they weren't there for that. It was etheric work, but it's a mess, right? So we want to be really careful that, yes, you're there for guidance. Yes, you're there to share wisdom, you know, and all of that, but you are not there to impose your will on anybody. Yeah. So what else comes up question-wise based on that?
Nothing. I mean, I know that for me, once you said the word obligation, and it's how we see it, I saw what it is for me, because I know that responsibility just carries a negative connotation to it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, responsibility is an obligation for Alicia.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good. Good. And responsibility, you know, it's funny because that is how everyone kind of, in one sense, a lot of people want more responsibility because it makes them feel grown up and responsible, right? Mature and all these things. But really, most people don't want responsibility. However, in your journey and on the spiritual path, you are constantly moving into greater and greater levels of responsibility. And that's self-responsibility above anything else, you know, that you are responsible for your actions, you are responsible for your choices, and you have to be very conscious about everything that you're doing, you know, and make conscious choices that necessarily are not going to serve the personal story of you, right? When they're not in everyone's highest good, because it could serve you great, but let's say it won't serve the immediate family well at all. Well, that has to be looked at, you know, and that's part of your journey, is moving less, you know, moving further and further away from that very selfish, self-centered spot that the personal self exists in. You know, it's very greedy, the personal self, very greedy. Even when, you know, this is a beautiful thing I love to point out to people when I'm working one-on-one with someone, there's always a point at which I get to point out to them that even their sense of altruism is greedy and selfish. And they'll look at me like, you've got to be kidding me. No, 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 no. You know, I want to serve. I want to be helpful. And I'm like, do you really? You know, she's laughing. Like, why? Oh, because it makes me feel good. Oh, really? Tell me that's not selfish. You do it for yourself because it makes you feel good, right? It makes me feel like I've done something worthwhile, and it makes me feel this, and it makes me feel that, and it makes me, and I say, oh, that's a lot of me's. That's a lot of I's. And as soon as anyone's talking about anything, and it's me and I and me and I, they are completely wrapped up in it, right? And of course, the mind is very good at arguing very benevolent reasons for everything. And this is a perfect example using service. That's a good one, because a lot of people are using their sense of being of service just to perpetuate the story. They have to be the savior, right? Because they feel victimized. So the other person's suffering that they're trying to alleviate makes them feel victimized. And it's because of that victimization that then they feel like they need to save them. You see? It's very selfish, isn't it? Really? It hides really well. It hides really well. Now, that's not to be mistaken for, you know, there are people who you're born and like, you'll see someone and they're a teacher and they'll be like, from the time I was little, I always wanted to be a teacher. You know, like, I just knew I wanted to be a teacher. That's not the patterning. That's who they are, right? Remember, you are a complex matrix of rays of light, and they are unique to you based on your evolutionary path. And so you will have propensities. You know, you will have certain rays that you absolutely identify more with, and that you maybe, you know, in this particular incarnation, or maybe your whole cycle here on the planet was about really working this one ray, you know? And so everybody's different that way. You know, that's why like artists are artists. It's like, that's their ray. That's what they do, you know, because that's the one that they're working on right now. And you have an opportunity in your evolution to continually work on different rays, to expand each one, you know, make them grander and more expressive and a greater part of who you are. But we're all a different balance of that, you know. And all of you would, if you really got quiet, you would know like what ray you're here to kind of specifically, like there's usually like one ray that's a really strong aspect of you here, you know. And I always knew for me it was the second ray. I just knew that I knew, you know. What color is that? That's the golden ray, the yellow ray. Love and wisdom, right? And it was very beautiful to me because, you know, along your path, and this is hard because I kind of have to give my own experience and because it points things to people. But don't use my experience to judge your own experience, because that's the danger here, that people will be like, well, I didn't have that experience, so I'm doing something wrong. Or don't ever judge your own path based on anybody else's, because everyone is completely unique. But I will say it was really beautiful for me because the very first experience I had with where I knew there was a master present and I felt that master it literally took the wind out of me, because the energy this master sends out hit my solar plexus so hard that it literally took my breath away. And it was Master Kuthumi. And Master Kuthumi is over the second ray. Right. And I didn't know that at the time because I didn't know anything about Kuthumi other than Kuthumi's name. That was it. So I love those moments, and you can look for those moments where you actually get confirmation about your own knowing. And that's the point. The point is that you have knowing, capital K knowing. This isn't brain stuff. This is just, you know it. And for me, that was it. I knew that. Like, I just knew, and I didn't understand the rays, but when I heard the yellow ray, I was like, that's it, that one. And it was funny, too, because there's so many people around me in my own life that are very much on the first ray. And And so it seemed weird to me that I always felt so drawn to this second ray thing. And then, you know, and to have Kutumi show up was very amazing for me because it was like, oh, I'm not crazy, right? No, that's not to say, I mean, you have aspects of all the rays, absolutely, absolutely. But I that was a confirmation for me. So I only say that to anyone listening because you all, you know, you kind of are your own detectives in your path. So you have things that, you know, pay attention to because everyone wants to second guess their knowing because the mind is so powerful and the mind will always come in and they'll go, oh, you know, you don't know that or you're just imagining that. It's probably its favorite thing to create doubt. You're just imagining, you just made that up. And you really have to move into a space where you trust your knowing. You know, outside of this paradigm, when you get into the level of Christ consciousness, that's all there is just knowing. That's it. It's just there, you know. It's just there. And that's, and I don't even know how else to say it. It's like if I go into meditation, like that's what I'll get. I'll get a, it's like a, I don't even know what it is. I guess some people would call it a download or something. It's not like I feel like something's downloading itself into me. It's just all of a sudden I have this knowing and I just know it. I know it through and through. Why? Who's to say? And why do I need to know that? I don't know. Like, but it's there. Sometimes I understand why. Sometimes I don't. Right. But it's not for me to question it. And it's not for me to go chasing around trying to figure out, oh, I better get on the internet and find out what that means and find out what that means. You know, everything unfolds in its perfect timing. So you just have to be patient and you just allow things to present themselves and, you know, you trust what you see and then just allow it to do what it's going to do. You know, you're not the doer who has to make everything make sense. Understand? There's this, you know, you can't even conceptualize what's playing itself out here in physicality, much less all the other levels that are also playing themselves out simultaneously with this level. Yeah. And they're all connected. So, you know, you get something in meditation one day and it says something. And then like, that's what everyone wants to do. Oh, you know, how exciting. Let's go figure that out. Must mean I'm supposed to do this. It doesn't mean anything, you know? You'll know when it means something, that something you need to take action on, because you'll know. But until then, the mind just wants to turn it into something else to personalize, you know? It's just, it is what it is. These are things you'll learn along the way. Yeah. But trust what comes. Because the thing is, if you don't trust and if you are constantly in a state of doubt, it's kind of like, think of it this way, like whatever you want to term it, like the universe is sending you these signals all the time to show you that you're connected, you know? And when you constantly are in the space of doubt, it's like you're pushing it away, pushing it away, pushing it away, right? Well, will the universe continue to send them as frequently if every time you just push it away? No. But if you start to pay attention and then start to recognize when something came and then be in gratitude for it. I mean, take that second to acknowledge it. Thank you. You know, thank you so much for that. I see that. Thank you. It's like that sends the signal that, oh, I'm open and receptive, right? And so what happens more? Well, it will happen more. And then you see more synchronicities in your life, you know, and then your life turns into this beautiful thing, this beautiful play that's playing itself out where it's like one synchronicity leads to the next and leads to the next. And then you're just kind of following it around like a little happy little puppy dog because it's just exciting, you know? And that's your natural state, that sense of wonder and excitement, you know? A little kid would walk into a big house and be excited about what's around every corner because they have no idea. Versus the adult that walks into the big house and is nervous when they turn the corner because they're afraid of what they're going to see, you know? It's that sense of wonder is a part of what you are, you know? And it's like something no one ever thinks about, but you should. You know, walk up to a door Like we have one here in the office. Just walk up to a door and take that moment and think that, you know, you're the one projecting what's on the other side. That's coming from you. How do you know when you look at a door what's on the other side? Well, because you're projecting it out, right? You're using your sense of memory of what was there before to project out what's going to be there. So you're determining what will be there when you open the door. Now imagine that you live in a state where the projection is instantaneous, right? So you could close a door. Oh, it would be like Monsters, Inc. Like you could close the door and open it again and be in a completely different place. But that's really where you come from. You know, it's just here because everything is so dense and there's this time lag that we experience between our what we send out into the causal realm and then it coming here into manifestation. So we don't see the connection. We don't see that we're the ones creating it. That our emotional attachment to things are what is creating this physical reality that we're experiencing on a day-to-day basis, collectively and individually, because both are going on simultaneously. And then the people around you, you know, right now, y'all think they're real. And they're not. That's always a good one. I remember the first time my guide said that to me, you still think he's real? And I was like, what? What? And she just laughed. And then I got it one day. I was like, oh, I got it one day because I heard another personal story. I heard my husband. Oh, my daughter. Oh, here was the thing. My daughter was in, I was in one room. My daughter, one of my daughters was in the other room. And she was not happy. I don't know what she had going on. She had something going on. And at that point in my work, I was in this very even-keeled place, this very kind of Buddhic place of equanimity, right? So she's carrying on, and it's like not even phasing me. Yeah. And then I hear my husband walking up the stairs, and then I hear him, like, not happy with her. And what I witnessed in that moment initially was I witnessed judgment toward him, right? That whole savior thing. Because in that moment, I felt victimized because of what I heard him doing to her, and I personalized it, and I felt victimized by it. And I witnessed it, you know? And then I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, like I just saw it. That was my unconscious mind in the form of him. Because what was really going on when she was doing all the whining thing, even though I was, you know, identified at that point with being in the state of equanimity, really underneath it all, hidden from me, was the me that was like, would you just shut up? Right? But no, I wasn't going to do that. I'm mommy. Right? And so it had to come out someplace, didn't it? And where did it come out? It came out through that thing that I always thought of as this person that was my husband. And then it hit me. Oh my God, like that, he's not even real. It's just a projection. It's just a projection. Interesting, yeah? People think you're crazy, you go tell them that. No one's real. But everyone is, no one's real here, people. Your whole reality is your own little hologram. You know, so you're witnessing all these aspects of the lower mind everywhere. And remember, there's only one. Your mind is not separate from anyone else's. There's one mind. One lower mind, one higher mind. Yeah? So people have this this is very funny. People right now, the big, you know, thing is this whole unity thing, unity consciousness. Like people have latched onto that. We're one. So mentally they can cognize that. We're all one. But no one has seemed to cognize at all that the lower mind is one. See, they think of it as a lofty thing and they can't see it from a very fundamental down in the world place. Down in the world where everyone seems so separate. No one's separate. There's no difference. You're all just as one in the illusion as you are outside of the illusion. You understand? Does that make sense? See, you're not moving from separation into unity. Separation doesn't exist. It's a faulty concept. It can't exist. There's only one appearing as everything. How could anything be separate? See, so even the concept of moving into something from something else is faulty to begin with. Everything's unified right now. You just don't witness it because the identification is in a concept and the concept is separation. And so that's all that's experienced because you're looking for it everywhere. See? That's what's going on. Is the mind as it sits in your individuated self is looking for proof of separation everywhere. Because at a very fundamental level, that's the anchor point that holds it all in place, is the belief that it even exists. The belief that you are separate. And so that's what you're looking for. Remember, I've told you over and over again, you know, if you're looking for something, you're going to find it. I promise you'll find it. Whatever it is, whatever your projection is, if you're looking for it, you will find it. If there's doubt that's created, you're going to start looking for something to prove that there was reason for doubt, and you will find it. Doesn't matter what it is. Okay. And so this isn't any different. It's not any different. So the lower mind, which is stuck in a concept, is just now, this all it's doing, it's just looking to prove that the concept is real. And so it spends all its time doing that. But there's nothing from just scientific, you know, from the level of physics, there's nothing separating you from anything, right? So you think that I'm looking at two women here who are sitting, you know, a couple feet apart from each other on a couch, and they would say that they're separated, but they really aren't, because there's nothing between them that isn't part of them. See, even the air isn't separate from you. You're moving through it. You know, it'd be easier to conceptualize if you had to move through Jell-O, right? Like if everything was moving through Jell-O, it's always touching you. You can't be separate from it. But because it's air and we witness it the way we do as if it doesn't exist, now we have this whole thing where we believe we're separate. There's nothing separating anything. Yeah.
So one thing that came up is when you said that, and I thought not everybody's going to know this and they might think it, right? So when you're, whatever it is that you're looking for, out there, you'll find it. So if you're looking for doubt, you'll find it. If you're looking for separation, you'll find it. And it hit me, well, if you're looking for happiness, how come we can't find that? But I know that if you're looking for happiness, you're actually not happy. So I just wanted to clarify that for other people that might actually have that thought, like, what if I'm looking for happiness? Like, why can't I find that?
That is an excellent point. It's an excellent point. And that's where the initial work, that whole law of attraction thing, really fell short, because it wasn't through the work of Abraham Hicks. They had it, but when they did the thing with the secret and then they kicked out the Hickses, they lost that whole part. And it's important because there's the concept of, you know, thinking positive, right? And boy, I could talk a lot about that, and I'm not going to get into it. But just, you know, setting an intention and thinking positively about something is not enough to make that manifest in a way that it's like a permanent kind of a thing, okay? Because the desire itself comes from the space of what? An unmet need, right? All desires come from unmet needs. So if you don't have happiness and you desire happiness, what you're actually doing is reinforcing the fact that you don't have it. By saying, I want it, what you're saying is, I don't have it. Right? And that's what sits underneath it. Right? So you're running away from a situation rather than finding it where you're at, which is truly the way that you would transcend the desire altogether. People will say, like, I'm not happy with this situation, so it needs to change. So they run from one thing, searching for another thing. And as long as they're running and they aren't honest with what's going on and they haven't been courageous enough to really face it head on, they're always going to recreate it because they have to. Remember, everything is coming up to be balanced here. If you're imbalanced in any area, it has to keep appearing in your life, in your physical manifested life. It has to appear. Because if you're running from it and it's being held, if it's being repressed or denied and it's sitting back there in the unconscious, it has to show up someplace. Well, if you're not looking at it consciously, then it has to come in the manifested form, you know, as another person or another situation or whatever. Okay? So just by saying, I want that, well, you're reinforcing the fact that you don't have it. And you can't run from something that you're in opposition to or repulsed by, thinking you're going to find the opposite. It doesn't work like that. The universe is going to keep bringing it to you because it's like, you know, you've got to master it here. Master it here. And then you can be done with it. Then you can be done with it. But that's how people get stuck in pattern consciousness is what it is. But that's how you maintain that, the whatever pattern it is that you're playing out. That's why it happens all the time. Because you can only go to a certain point with it and then you run again. You know? Because most people just are not willing to face the fear that's sitting underneath it. Maybe it's, I'm afraid of being alone, so I'm looking for a person. Because I don't want to be alone, you know. And until you're okay with being alone, you're never going to find the person that you're going to want to be with. The pattern won't let you, right? The pattern is always going to search for the thing that's going to bring the pattern back for you to see again. Because that's the key, you know, that unlocks your prison door. Now, people see it as like some kind of punishment. No, no, no. It's there so that you can free yourself. That's the whole point. If everyone could just understand that all these quote-unquote bad things that happen to them in their lives are actually a gift in disguise, the world would change so fast. It'd be so fast. You know, it's not punishment. You've brought it to your own door for the express reason of seeing through it, confronting it, looking at your pain, looking at your fear, seeing what is at the core of it, you know, seeing those things that are locked back there in the deepest recesses of your psyche and bringing them forward, seeing them for what they are, allowing it to hurt, releasing all that trapped energy. You have lifetimes worth of trapped energy stuck in this physical form. It gets released. Lots of tears. I mean, bucket loads of tears along the way. Yeah. And it's good. Let it go, you know? Free it up for something new to take its place. But that's what it takes. You've got to be willing to do that work. You know, if you're going to run, I promise you, you're never going to find it. Even though it's presented to you over and over and over again, you're never going to see it for what it actually is. You know, everything you are in opposition to is a gift in disguise. If you can actually see it and work with it and not fight against it, but allow it. Be humble. Boy, it takes humility to see, you know, when I say yourself, it's not really you. It's a program. But it is the personal self that is undoing the personal self simultaneously. And it takes a lot of humility to do that. So stay humble, recognizing that there are, you know, so many things to this world that you have no concept of. For as much as you may have read and for as many videos as you've watched on YouTube or whatever, there's so much more than you have any concept of. So be humble. Yeah, and start looking within. When you get little moments where you feel a twinge or that, stop and look at that. You know, don't dismiss it. Don't dismiss it. It's important. And for most people to be like, oh, you're crazy. I'd be looking at stuff all day long. Well, you know what? So look all day long. Because the beauty is, if you look all day long, eventually there's going to be a day where you're going to have a whole day and you won't have to look at anything. Because that won't be happening to you all day long anymore. You truly do move into that space. We about ready? Yeah? Okay. So I'm getting the cue that it's time for meditation. So hopefully I sounded a little more cheery tonight. Oh, I'm always cheery on the inside, even if I sound like an ogre on the outside, right? My students know that. Okay, very good. We will be back with you next Thursday night. And for anyone who's interested, you can always listen to our rerun next Wednesday. We play that, what is it, Pacific time, 9 o'clock, I think? Yes. Yeah. Or Pacific time, 6 o'clock? No, 9 o'clock. No. Yeah, midnight on the east. Okay. We have reruns. And then you can always visit the ShambhalaCenter.org. And through BBS, we would love any donation you ever want to send our way. We are a nonprofit organization run by volunteers. So I think that's it for tonight. We're going to go into meditation. Everybody have a beautiful and blessed week and just stay centered, okay? Because it's going to be a rough ride the next few weeks, but you can do it. We all can do it. We love you very much. Good night. Thank you.
divine.